So you gotta speak right into it.
Okay, I got it.
Just a minute. All right, introducing Christina Hatch, our speaker for this class. I actually don't know much about her. She's a homeschooling mother. We're gonna let her introduce a little bit about herself.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay, everybody, thanks for coming in today. We're going to talk about Wild and Free and how nature study builds independent thinkers. I'm having a couple tech problems today, so please be patient. Okay. First of all, Henry David Thoreau said, "All good things are wild and free." And I could not agree more. Today we're going to talk about how nature study builds independent thinkers. So first off, I want to introduce myself. I'm Christina Hatch. I have been homeschooling for 10 years, and I've owned a curriculum company for 7. I have done podcasts and other speaking events on nature study, and I absolutely love this subject. How many of you are new to homeschooling? Okay, got a couple. And how many of you would describe yourself as a 5 or more year veteran of homeschooling? Awesome. I'm assuming everyone else is kind of in between there. And I don't want to take it for granted, but how many of you have heard of nature study before? Okay, perfect. We got a good base to start with, and if not, don't worry about it. We're going to kind of go through it. But a basic synopsis of what nature study is going outside and observing nature, and it's supported by practices like nature journaling. Okay, what about kiddos? How many of you guys have like little guys, like first grade and under? Awesome. 7 to 11? Teenagers? Okay, perfect. We got the full mix. I love it. We're going to talk about how nature study works during different phases and stages, so there is going to be something here for everyone. Okay. Have you guys ever noticed how there's like certain household tasks that kind of set the tone for everything else in your house? Like if the dishes are clean in your sink, then it's easier to keep your kitchen clean. Or if you wake up at a decent time, your day goes smoother. Nature study is kind of one of those habits for your homeschool. It can set the tone for your homeschool and is one of the heavy lifter tipping points that can really shift the entire feel of what you're doing. It lays the foundation for also many important principles and skills of learning. So with that in mind, let's start at the natural place, which is Leonardo da Vinci. Leonardo da Vinci, when we think of him, we think of his genius. We think about his inventions and his art. We think about the Mona Lisa, you know, the things that he's most well known for. However, we often overlook how he was able to take all these little curiosities and pull them together and harness them to become a great thinker. In his time, he was not able to attend schools the way we have them now. He was essentially homeschooled, where he learned how to read and write at home. Then he went on to work as an apprentice and learned most through teaching himself, through observation. He spent hours observing the natural world. He would watch birds in flight, study how water moved, or examine muscles and bones. And he didn't just look, he kept notebooks, lots and lots and lots of notebooks, where he filled them with sketches and questions and diagrams. And sometimes they were messy, which actually gives me some comfort, because have you ever seen little boys' handwriting? Right? It may be a mark of unknown genius, I'm hoping. We'll see. But sometimes they were beautiful, of course, with him being an artist. And as he developed the skill of drawing and made new connections, he was always, always, always curious. One of my favorite examples is his study of birds. Leonardo carefully observed the shapes of the wings, how the feathers overlapped, how air moved around them. He was watching their minute movements. And he was doing this not just so that he could draw better birds, which he did sometimes watch nature so that he could better represent it in his artwork. But he asked the question, how does flight actually work? And those observations led him to design flying machines that were centuries ahead of his time. And while he didn't succeed in his lifetime, the thinking behind it mattered. In fact, centuries later, the Wright brothers, as they were trying to perfect flight and achieve the first sustained and controlled flight, studied the movements of birds as well, and was able to get those last little pieces that made their invention work. This way of learning shaped Leonardo's art as well. He would study anatomy, which allowed him to paint the human body with realism that nobody had seen before, as nature trained his eye, his hand, and his mind. And what I really love about Leonardo is that he didn't separate art, science, and invention. Nature was his teacher in all of it. What made him extraordinary wasn't that he knew more than those around him. It was that he learned how to see and then asked really great questions. And that habit of observation shaped everything that followed. Leonardo obviously is a very extraordinary example, but the habit that shaped his thinking is surprisingly ordinary. It's the same habit we practice when we slow down, observe carefully, and record what we notice in nature. He wasn't alone either. There were many, many, many thinkers throughout history who followed the same pattern, learning at home, keeping notebooks, spending long hours outdoors in careful observation. They lived in different centuries, they had different missions, and gave different contributions to the world, but the same habit was underneath it all. And so I want to ask you guys, how powerful can this habit be in your homeschool and your homeschool journey? And what kind of skills can your kids learn by doing it? Okay. Some of the skills that children learn through nature study is observation, and we're going to talk about the science of attention and how it serves all subjects. Problem solving, as the foundation of scientific thinking and innovation, and expression, how there's more than one right way to narrate your discoveries. Another really cool example of this type of thinking is George Washington Carver. When he was faced with failing crops and poor soil, he started by paying really close attention. And then he observed patterns in plants and soil and recorded what he noticed in many ways. Sometimes he had drawings, sometimes he had written notes, sometimes he had measurements. He did a lot of experiments and recorded everything that he learned from those. His notebooks weren't about being beautiful, they were about thinking clearly. Because when you're digesting that much information, you need a spot to put it, like an external brain, to help you retain it and process it. He used the power of observation to solve complex problems. And at the heart of scientific thinking is asking questions and making observations, both of which nature study does a beautiful job at laying the foundation for. One of the greatest tools for nature study is nature journaling. And I want to kind of clear up some misconceptions here. You don't need to have a specific type of notebook to be able to make a nature journal. Some people will say that you need watercolor paper, watercolor paints, pen and ink to be able to nature study. But that's just not true. I have seen my 9-year-old pull out a napkin from a fast food place and draw a picture of a bird he saw in a park, okay? Because that's where his heart was at and he didn't have his notebook with him. But you can use a line notebook and a pencil, or a structured book with some guiding questions. There's a lot of different styles that you can use and still have the same effect. Another big conception about nature journaling is that it needs to be beautiful. If you guys Google nature journaling, you're going to see some really, really beautiful notebooks. And heaven forbid you go on Pinterest. But it's not just an art project. While your drawing skills will improve with practice and careful observation, that isn't the goal. The goal is to express what you see. Some children love to draw, others prefer to write, and others, like my oldest, who loves math and analytics, would rather just measure things and track things over time. There's no wrong way to keep a nature journal as long as the focus is on observation and learning how to express what you notice. And then one other important note is if you start the habit of nature journaling with your kids, I would encourage you not to use this as their writing, not to try to double dip on subjects on this particular thing. Because when you're working on their writing, you're going to pay attention to things like their handwriting or their grammar or how much detail they put or how many sentences they wrote, depending on where they're at with their writing development. And with this practice, the goal is to practice observing. The goal is to practice narrating what you see, expressing and processing what you see. And so with that goal in mind, when you become too critical of their spelling, for example, it might make them shut down and associate this with an uncomfortable growth task instead of a comfortable curiosity task. Over time, this practice begins to shape more than skills. It starts to shape character. Children learn about patience not because we lecture about it, but because nature refuses to hurry. You can't rush a seed to sprout or a bird to return in spring. And some things only reveal themselves after you come back again and again. I wanted to share a story about an apple tree study that I did with my kids a couple years ago. It was actually 2020 during the pandemic, so we had a lot of time at home. And we decided to go ahead and use the apple trees in the backyard as our nature study for a while. And so every week, we would go out and look at the little buds before spring to just look for the very, very first signs that spring was coming. And we would watch the buds, and then we watched as they started to grow and started to get a little color underneath them, excitedly waiting for the flowers to bloom. And the morning the flowers bloomed on the tree, I had 8 kids, I don't know, maybe probably that many, between my nieces and nephews and mine, come rushing into the house. They bloom, grab your nature journals. They were so excited. And we went outside and we record their tender little petals and the little details, and we watched the bees busily working between the branches. As time went on, we watched the petals fall, and the kids were really concerned about this because they loved the flowers. They're like, well, what's gonna happen? Why is this happening? And I said, wait and see. And we watched as the ovum slowly swelled into apples throughout the summer. Funny side note, you should have seen the horror on my children's faces when my father-in-law cut the branch down at the apple that they had been tracking. So be careful with that one. However, there were lots of other apples on the tree, and they were able to watch the trees go full cycle. It was a really, really beautiful time in our homeschooling experience because they learned to appreciate that incremental growth in what felt like an eternity to them and appreciate the miracle of creation. They also started learning resilience through the work itself. Anyone who has tried to draw what they actually see knows the frustration of it, when your hand doesn't quite do what your mind is telling it to do. But each attempt sharpens the eye, steadies the hand, and builds confidence. With every journal entry, the kids felt more confident in being able to notice the details and to draw what they were actually seeing. And you will be surprised at how fast and how well your scientific drawing skills get when you start to draw what you really see. There's a lot of arguments about the role of gifts and talents in art, but scientific drawing is a skill that you actually can learn and practice. Additionally, sometimes they're recording resilience itself. There were some flowers that did not turn into apples. There were some apples that were eaten by worms. There were some branches that were trimmed by well-meaning grandpas. But in the end, we had a harvest. And as a side note to you mothers, I also want to say that you will too. All the work, all these little incremental changes, these little things that you do each day homeschooling your kids don't look like a lot in the moment, but in the end, you will see the fruits of them. I know for me personally, now that I've been doing it for 10 or so years, I know that I'm starting to see the fruits of the things that we did with them since they were little. When we went to Italy a couple years ago, we went to the Uffizi Gallery and we got to see some of the greatest works in Western civilization. And I had more than one person comment that they were so impressed with the way that my boys engaged with the work. because they would go and they would look and they would ask questions and they would appreciate the beauty slowly. And the only reason that they were able to do that at those younger ages is because we had a habit of doing artist study at home. And they had a habit of looking at the work. They had a habit of nature study, of slowing down and noticing. And it was really, really wonderful homeschooling mom moment to be able to start to see the fruits of that. Another thing that nature study does, and probably one of its most important jobs, is that it preserves curiosity. Charlotte Mason taught us that children are born persons. They come into this world with a love of learning. They come into this world with wonder, with curiosity. And then slowly, as we age, that starts to deaden. As homeschooling parents, though, we have a unique privilege of being able to preserve that curiosity, and this practice does that. A good example of this from history is Isaac Newton. During his pandemic in 1665, he was sent home from Cambridge University, and he ended up having a lot of time to slow down and think. He later called this time his Year of Wonders, because he was able to start to solidify some of his thoughts about optics and physics and gravity. One day, when he was sitting out by an apple tree, he watched an apple fall. The simple observation. And then he thought, why does it fall down instead of sideways or up? And that great question led to some of his thoughts on gravity that changed the world. I'm sure you can think of dozens of other skills and virtues that can be gained through this simple practice of outdoor observation, and some of them will come as surprises, just like they did for George the Mastral. In the 1940s, this Swiss engineer was out walking his dog, and he got some of those bergs on his coat and on the dog's fur. And instead of just plucking them off and going about his day, he leaned in and looked closer. He studied them under a microscope and discovered tiny little hooks that latched onto the loops of fabric. That simple observation led to the invention of Velcro, something that we use everywhere, from shoes and jackets to spacesuits. Noticing what nature is already doing well can lead to innovation. You know that old saying, why reinvent the wheel? I think a great question, another great saying is, why reinvent something that nature has solved so efficiently? And while biomimicry is one of my favorite topics, and one of the best examples of how a nature study can change the world through innovation, that's not the only way. Spending time outside, wild and free, creates space for discovery and contemplation. Neuroscientists have found that a large brain network becomes active when we're at rest, not doing nothing, but quietly organizing and weaving together what we've observed and experienced. I'm going to let you just rest with that for a minute. When we see our little boys staring off into space, their brain is doing important work. It's weaving together what we've observed and experienced. And that stillness has a vast value in and of itself. How many times have you, while lying under a tree looking up into the dappled light, had a sudden realization, a sense of clarity, or found yourself wondering about something that you wouldn't have otherwise? It's in those quiet moments that we make new connections, and our brain can process what we learned earlier in the day. John Muir says, "In every walk in nature, one receives more than he seeks." Okay, we've talked a bit about why the habit of nature study matters. And before we look at the science behind it, I wanted you guys to have a chance to experience yourself. So, how many of you have seen a daisy before? Okay, good. We've got a good starting point. If not, this next part might be a little bit difficult, but that's okay. I'll bring you along. So, in your notebook, you've got some blank space, and I want you guys to pull that open and grab a pen or pencil if you have one. I'm going to ask you to draw a daisy based off of what you remember, without looking anything up. And I'm going to give you a minute to do this. Okay, how did that go? Did you guys remember how many petals there were? Do you remember what the leaf looked like? It's surprising how many details slip past us when we think we already know something, but that's okay. We're about to try it again, and I'm going to give you two big advantages. First, you're going to have a little bit more time. And the second is you're going to get to grab one of these daisies up here off the stage and have something physical to look like at in your hand, okay? You're gonna get the opportunity to do some careful observation. So if you guys wanna come up and grab one, please do. If you're shy and you don't want to, I'll also have one up on the big screen.
Christina, did you put this out while we were drawing or the
chemical time? While you were drawing.
I know,
I'm too.
What's that? I know, right? That's a good point.
Did you think Christine would bring the same degree to draw in a nature study?
Sorry.
Okay, this time, I want you to go ahead and take a few seconds to look at it, and really look at it. I want you to draw what you actually see, not what you expect to see, but what's right in front of you. I'm going to go ahead and give you your 2 minutes now.
Oh.
Okay. What changed this time? Did you notice more details? Did it change the way you looked at the flower, even if your drawing wasn't perfect? Imagine that you had some more time at leisure, outside, in the sun, and you saw the flower in context. You could see where it grew, how it grew. As somebody pointed out as they were grabbing the flower, you can't draw what it smells like, but you can write what it smells like, right? There is some real science behind why this practice matters for focus and attention. Attention is not something that you either have or don't have. It's like a muscle, and it strengthens with practice. Even that simple daisy exercise increased your attention to detail in just a few minutes. When children slow down, observe carefully, and record what they see, they are practicing sustained attention in a gentle and low-pressure way. Nature itself supports this process. Studies show that spending time in natural environments improves executive function, which is the part of the brain that helps us focus, regulate ourselves, and stay on task. Honestly, as a homeschool mom, that sentence alone makes me want to go out in nature more, because who couldn't use more of that? And the best part is, nature does this without demanding anything from us. It holds our attention softly, giving the brain a chance to reset and refocus. What's important is that this kind of attention doesn't stay outside. After going through the experience of being outside in nature and practicing that careful observation and attention, when they come back inside to do their other studies, they have these habits and these rhythms and this pacing now where they can read more closely, notice patterns in math, write with more detail, and think deeply about science and history. In other words, nature study is not a break from learning. It is strengthening the very skills that make learning possible. There's a reason we emphasize writing or drawing what we observe. When we bring our hands into the process, something really important happens in the brain. How many more details did you notice in your daisy when you actually tried to draw what you were seeing versus just looking at it at the beginning? Research in cognitive science shows that writing and drawing are not just ways of capturing information, they're ways of processing it. When your hand moves to draw a leaf or write a description, multiple areas of the brain are activated at once. The parts that handle perception, memory, fine motor skills, and language. This means that active recording isn't separate from thinking. It is thinking. The brain makes stronger and more lasting connections when we slow down to observe, interpret, and translate an experience into marks on a page. This is why people who keep nature journals often notice more over time. Their brains start to tune into patterns and relationships that are easy to miss at a first glance. In a world where 15-second video clips is the pace of consumption, what kind of advantage will your children have by having the ability to digest information intentionally, to sit with an observation long enough to think critically and find connections? While technology, like any other tool, can be a blessing or a curse depending on how it's used, there is something to be said for these old school methods. There was a study that showed college students who hand wrote notes versus typed notes tended to retain and understand the material better afterwards. They were more likely to summarize the concepts in their own words versus writing them verbatim, which added to another step in mental processing. It was like their brain was hearing the information twice, once when the speaker spoke it, and then once as they narrated it in their mind before translating it to the page. Charlotte Mason said, "We are all meant to be naturalists, each in his degree, and it is inexcusable to live in a world so full of the marvels of plant and animal life and to care for none of these things. Everything I've talked about so far applies to across ages, but the way nature study looks in your home is going to change drastically from age 3 to age 16. And that doesn't mean that it stopped working. It just means that it's growing with them. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the different ages and stages with nature study. And we're going to go ahead and start with our little guys. Young children are a wonderful place to start. At this stage, nature study is about building the habit of going outside and learning how to notice. It can be as simple as looking at things and giving them names. Look at this leaf. Do you see the spots? Or would you like to hold the caterpillar? Nature journaling starts with modeling. If you keep a nature journal yourself, they will want to join you. We all know that stage. I can do it myself, right? They want to do what you're doing. And so if you talk out loud about what you're drawing or writing, when they make their first entries, you can ask them to narrate what they noticed and offer to write their words for them. This is a picture of my son making one of his very first nature journal entries. He told me it was a picture of the beautiful colors he saw in the autumn leaves and how they fall down, down, down. He was 3 years old. At this stage, it is going to be more about enthusiasm than realism, and that's exactly right. It's about drawing attention and setting affections for the natural world. Charlotte Mason taught us that as soon as a child is old enough to keep it, a nature diary is a source of delight for a child. If you hadn't started with simple outdoor time and noticing when they were younger, it's not too late. But I would still start with that even at these ages as they get a little bit older. It's a lot easier to ask them to record what they notice if they've had practice noticing. You should make it fun and connecting, and as with everything else in homeschool, it starts with the heart of the child and ordering their affections. As children grow, nature study becomes more skill-based and more personal. It's a great time to explore different journaling styles. Some kids love drawing, others prefer writing, tracking or labeling their observations. Some may write a lot, some may do the very least amount, but they come back and want to do more later. You can gently challenge their observations by asking questions like, is that what you really saw or what you were expecting to see? Or, can you give me a little bit more detail? What color were the wings? Not as a correction, but as an invitation to look again. You could do some formal drawing instructions separately from nature study to help build confidence or show them examples of different styles and methods. Kids at this age also really love tools. So if you give them a magnifying glass or a bug catcher, they're going to dive right in. Also, little mini lessons about things like life cycles or metamorphosis can help spark curiosity or help answer the questions that they're naturally going to have as they explore. This is also where many of them develop special interests, such as birds or mushrooms, to track and learn about and start wanting to build collections or a cabinet of curiosities. The goal at this stage is ownership. The journal becomes theirs, and they own what they discover, more than they'll ever learn what you present. Charlotte Mason has said that when children are old enough to understand that science itself is in a sense sacred and demands some sacrifice, all the common information that they have been gathering until then, the habits of observation that they have acquired, will form an excellent groundwork for scientific education. In the meantime, let them consider the lilies of the field and the fowls of the air. Teen years can feel tricky. Nature study, like many childhood rhythms, may appear to fade. Sometimes modeling still matters, and sometimes it doesn't. What matters most is honoring their growing need for autonomy. Nature still offers benefits, even when engagement looks quiet or indirect. Sometimes spending time outside, movement, giving them space to think and connect, connect to where they're from, will continue to shape their attention and their well-being. Once again, if you haven't had any practice of nature study before and you're just stepping in at this stage, this is a really great time to kind of build that family culture and consider the lilies of the field and the fowls of the air, even if they're not keen on writing it down. If you're looking for a hook, though, at this age, practical knowledge often resonates more. So if you can tie it to what they're studying in science and biology or earth science or physics, then they might get a little bit more enthusiastic. Or teaching them the names of local plants and animals, edible berries, outdoor survival skills is often another really great hook to capture their imagination. But much of this work is going to go underground, and you may not see immediate results. Their relationship with nature is still forming, and the fruits of feeling grounded and focused will surface again. You probably thought I was done, but even adults benefit from the habit of noticing, recording, and resting in nature. There is a concept in classical education called scholae. It is the idea that mothers will continue their lifelong love of learning, growth, and development to inspire their children. Nature study can do a mother as much good as a classic novel, a new skill, or a deep dive into scientific principle. By including the habit of nature study as part of your own personal scholae, you model it for your children and enhance your own learning. Over time, it shapes family culture into one that appreciates beauty, stillness, and thoughtful contemplation, and values observation and critical thinking. Today we talked about observation, curiosity, attention, innovation, and the simple act of recording what we notice. Underneath all of this, though, is something very ordinary. Nature study, at its heart, is a habit of noticing and appreciating. If you guys want some more details on the how-tos of nature study, or you want to check out some of the tools that we've enjoyed as a family as we've done nature study through the years, or even if you've had this practice in your own home long enough to actually start seeing the fruits, I would love to hear your stories. So I'm going to be at a booth out there titled Hatching Curiosity, and you can come by and say hello. And even if you've done it in the past and you're not quite sure how to reintroduce it at whatever the new ages and stages your kids are at, I'd love to chat. Nature study works at every stage and in every season of life. Some days may look like a journal page or a careful drawing. Other days may just be a walk, a conversation, or a quiet moment outdoors. But to answer the question we said at the beginning, how this seemingly wild and free concept of nature study can build independent thinkers, is that children who practice nature study feel confident in themselves. They trust themselves to be able to find the answers and to come up with creative solutions. They learn how to think deeply, how to watch carefully, how to ask great questions, and how to own their education. My hope is that nature study can become one of those quiet rhythms in your day that is not only restorative, but kind of underpins the other things that you're trying to teach your kids and supports that growth of those thoughtful, curious, and independent thinkers. Thanks.
I don't know how to get out of this. So.
Thank you.
Thank you, Christina. Our next class starts in 15 minutes, so you have time to check out all the vendors or wander around and choose which classroom. And talk amongst yourselves. Thank you.
Sorry, I can't see the main screen, so I have to go up here.